Welcome to Deloitte Global Insights, a production of Deloitte Touche Tohmatsu Limited. Deloitte Global Insights is an audio news podcast that looks at important cross-border issues that affect the global business community. I'm Stephen Heasley, and I'll be your host for today's program, U.S. Health Reform, Recalibrating Roles and Relationships Across the Healthcare Value Chain. As healthcare reforms in the U.S. gain traction, stakeholders are recalibrating their roles and relationships across the healthcare value chain. On the 15th of May, 2014, the Financial Times, in association with Deloitte, will bring you the FT U.S. Healthcare and Life Sciences Conference. The event, which is quickly being established as a premier gathering for life sciences and healthcare industry leaders in the U.S., will address key issues facing today's healthcare industry and how companies are adapting to this era of reform. Here today to discuss the conference themes are Pete Mooney, Terry Heisey, and Dr. Harry Greenspun. Pete is Deloitte's global industry leader for the life sciences and healthcare industry. Pete, great to talk to you again today.
Thanks, Stephen. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Terry Heisey is vice chairman and life sciences sector leader for Deloitte LLP in the United States. Hi, Terry. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be part of the conversation.
And Dr. Harry Greenspun is the senior advisor for healthcare transformation and technology at the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions, which is part of Deloitte LLP in the United States. Hi, Harry.
Great to be here.
So let's get started. As we prepare to enter the fourth year since the Accountable Care Act, or ACA, was enacted in the U.S., payers, providers, and health insurance companies are experimenting with new pay-for-performance measures, and established and emerging players are realizing the potential for and slowly building new business models focused on bringing healthcare closer to the patient. So as we cross this new threshold, what's really been the impact of reform to date on the life sciences industry in the U.S., and what are some of the key learnings? Let's start with you, Pete.
Thanks, Stephen. It's an interesting topic, and I think that healthcare reform is having a huge impact on the life sciences industries. And it's not just the ACA. We tend to talk about that from a U.S. perspective. But healthcare reform is really a global phenomenon. And you mentioned paper for performance, and that is something that really is underlying healthcare reform just about everywhere in the world. And it's having a huge impact on the life sciences industries because we're starting to move to a world where we're not going to be paying for the product anymore. We're going to be paying for the value that that product represents in terms of the outcomes it produces in patients. And that transition is going to take a while. There's a lot of experimentation going on around it. But it's really going to transform the way pharmaceuticals companies and device companies need to think about the way they price their product, and it'll be less about the product itself and more about, am I driving outcomes and am I driving value?
Yeah, Pete, I agree. I think you used a key word in there, which is transformation. And I know when we take a look in the U.S., the other thing that we see is you had the Affordable Care Act, but that actually is a small component in terms of it being a forcing function on the broad changes that are happening. And just market forces in general are changing the way life science companies need to engage with the various stakeholders. And there was also another important piece of legislation that occurred a couple years in advance of that under the Reinvestment and Recovery Act that provided the funding and the requirements for a lot of the stuff that we see today around health information technology, electronic medical records, other things that I think are helping to fuel the transformation that you talked about.
Yeah, Terry, great points. And, we talk about these large market forces. I think one of the big ones we're seeing across the board is really around consumerism, because now, not only life sciences companies, but also payers and providers have got to think of, who's the buyer and what are they interested in, what data do they have to go on, because the decisions consumers make on, what type of coverage they have or where they go for care determines what they're eligible for and what drugs get covered under their plans.
Yeah, I think those are great points. And, to the point, the act itself, the ACA itself, it was a forcing function, as Terry said, but it's not necessarily the driving influence. It's the consumerism, it's the interest in healthcare that individuals are getting, and it's this whole focus on what's the value of what I'm getting that's really starting to drive it. And it's a transition that probably would have happened anyway. A lot of the healthcare reform initiatives are starting to really push it along.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, because I know in some of the modeling that we've done around the economic impact of it, we see what's happening in healthcare in the U.S., and this is looking at the life science companies, both drugs and devices, as probably having an impact in the anywhere from 11 to 13% range in terms of adverse revenue impact. But it's really only a couple of those percentage points that are coming from things that you can directly map back to the legislation. The rest of it is driven by pure market forces, the consolidation, the increased use of information, and people making and focusing a lot more on that whole value question.
Yeah. I think that's probably true globally as well, Terry.
Yeah, I think one other aspect just to throw in is this whole effort around transparency that, you know, when deals get struck or pricing gets done, it's not just between two parties. It becomes something that is known to a much broader audience and then it can have a much bigger impact.
That's a great transition, Harry, how you talk about it. Really, it's a system. It's not just individual players. And I want to ask you a little bit more about this value system in a moment, but first I wanted to move on to another hot topic, mHealth. So mHealth, or mobile healthcare, particularly when combined with other smart technologies, including the cloud, social networking, the power of big data, really has the potential to transform healthcare. However, while the reported benefits of mHealth are pretty well known, many have been unable to capitalize on the potential. So how can the potential of mobile health be harnessed to make a real and tangible impact on these health costs and on this health transformation? Harry, why don't we hear your thoughts first?
It was interesting. So, you know, mobile has transformed lots of other industries, and it's, you know, as you look at healthcare, healthcare follows many other industries, particularly in technology. And one of the things that we've seen in mobile health is it has really been stuck in sort of the fitness and wellness space. It hasn't really pushed its way into what I call mainstream healthcare. We really need to find a way to incorporate the kind of data and the kind of access to data that people have with, you know, our mainstream healthcare records, our electronic medical records, the sort of things that we can apply analytics to. Because the advantage are being able to do remote monitoring, continuous data collection, early warnings, lots of really exciting things. But these are difficult to build and will be a while before we start seeing them rolled out broadly.
Harry, I think that's a really good point about how this has mainly been a fitness initiative, and it's interesting to note that some of the major companies have very recently even just decided to exit that business, and it'll be interesting to see how that transforms going forward and whether the fitness companies decide they still want to be in the mHealth platforms going forward. But it still says there's a tremendous opportunity for mHealth, and we see it particularly in the developing world globally, as it has the opportunity to reach people that already have lots of mobile capability and do some interesting things out in those marketplaces.
Yeah, I think great points by both of you guys. And the other thing, too, is I think back, Pete, to some of the research we did a couple of years ago and the increasing desire that people have for being able to really embrace the concept of anytime, anywhere, all the time, healthcare management and delivery, and the role that mobile can play in that. And then I couple that with really the efforts that many companies are undertaking today when they really begin to think about beyond the product, kind of the common use vernacular is beyond the pill types of offerings and propositions. And I think there's, for many companies, as they think about disease management and playing a broader, higher value role, that mobile becomes an important enabler as part of that as well.
Yeah, definitely, Terry. And I think what we'll see is more drugs and devices coming out with a companion app, which will be the services used to make sure that the outcomes achieved by those drugs and devices gets achieved.
Yeah, it's an old adage, isn't it, Harry, that you know half the problem with the drug is just getting people to actually take it or comply with whatever the regime is that they need to follow. And if you can hook up some kind of an app or something that would improve compliance, you know, the efficacy of drugs would go up tremendously.
Right, and you're only talking the first month, right? Because it gets even worse the second month after you get the script.
Exactly right.
Yeah, really interesting perspectives, guys. For my last question, you know, while access to healthcare may be making headlines in the ongoing debate on U.S. healthcare reform, you know, potentially the largest impact will come from the measures aimed at tackling the escalating costs and improving the quality of care. So earlier in the podcast, we talked about pay-for-performance reforms, which price healthcare products and services based on the value and quality rather than the volume that they accrue to patients and the healthcare system. You know, these pay-for-performance reforms are really making inroads in transforming healthcare systems around the world. So while the goals of the new value system are clear, you know, there's still a lot of uncertainties that remain. So Terry, let me toss it over to you. What are your thoughts on that statement, that while the goals of the new value system are clear, many uncertainties remain?
I think that that's a pretty interesting statement, Stephen. I've always been a fan of the adage that, you know, one should never confuse a common goal to be a common motivation. And I think the real key thing is, as we look across the system, it's how do we, over time, continue to drive towards increasingly aligned incentives and motivations with people. From a value standpoint, we see this coming on big time these days in terms of the conversations that the life science companies, whether you're drug or device, need to be really having with the marketplace. You need to be able to have the right clinical profile. You need to have a great safety profile, but you also need to understand the economic impact that you deliver as part of the drug or the device that you're providing, and make certain that over time that that continues to make sense in the marketplace and that it's value that the marketplace is willing to pay for. And to do that, you have to really have a systems view and understand the burden disease and different conditions and engage in a totally different way. And when it comes to contracting, I mean, some of the nuanced types of conversations we've been having with people is it a value-based contracting? Is it indication-based contracting? Is it outcomes-based contracting? And some people might think those are the same thing, but they're really different in practice. So it continues to evolve, which requires new capabilities on the part of the companies.
Yeah, and certainly, Terry, one of the capabilities they need is actually better data collection, because if you think about the work that life sciences companies are used to doing in terms of clinical trials and related activities, the thought of collecting outcomes data and continuing to monitoring these things out in terms of use is a big challenge. And it's sort of the data they aren't used to collecting and don't really have a great way of doing. So it's going to be requiring a lot of retooling by a number of companies in order to be able to demonstrate value, but prove they actually have that value with data.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Harry. It's data collection as well as the ability to generate insights off of that, which means the data is usable, but that also within your organization, you know, you've got the skills, abilities, and you know the people who can actually translate that into a clinical insight and then convert that into, you know, a value conversation. And I know, you know, Pete, you and I've had a number of conversations on this topic as it relates to both the U.S. and the global market.
I predict we're going to see a lot more training in academic institutions around areas like healthcare economics and areas like that that have really not been to this point major areas of emphasis. And I think Harry's right. It is going to be a lot about data and how you analyze it. It's an old adage that the pharma companies, as soon as they have launched a product, know less about the product in terms of its performance than the market knows at that point. And we've got to get the pharma companies, you know, more at the user, more at the coal face, as we would say, in terms of the data that's getting collected, so that they actually can do the kinds of analysis that they're going to need to do in the future to start to really close the value equation. So I think that's all very interesting stuff.
And Pete, I think, you know, the other side of this coin is actually very exciting, which is really as you open up the value conversation, you open the door for a lot of really interesting innovation. That's for new types of for drugs and devices and new services, as well as some old ones. You think about healthcare delivery using telehealth. You know, telehealth's been around since the 1920s. It hasn't really caught on, not because of a lack of good technology. It's really because of a lack of aligned reimbursement incentives. And as we look at lots of areas across healthcare where you can make major changes, once interests are aligned, this opens some really interesting doors.
It does, Harry, and I think it's really an opportunity to focus much more on the whole patient experience as well. And we see, you know, many of the companies really trying to figure out how do they become a more patient-focused organization, both in terms of the products they develop, but also how they engage in and support the marketplace.
You know, at the end of the day, value is the right way to think about it, and many other industries have been through this kind of a transition where they've moved to the value side of it in terms of what their consumers or customers are looking for. And, you know, healthcare and life sciences, just because of the complexity of what of the problem and because of the fact that people's health is involved, has just been, you know, slow to make that transition. But it's really exciting if you start to think about the opportunities of being able to actually make that transition and the improvements in quality, the reductions in cost, and the improvement in access, all of the things that will come with that if we can really make that transition.
Yeah, I think you gentlemen summed it up very well. While it's a challenging environment, there's both interesting and exciting times ahead for the global life science and healthcare industry. So our listeners out there, you can learn more by either attending the conference or by visiting our website to read related reports and thought leadership. Pete, Terry, and Harry, thanks so much for taking time out and joining me today on Deloitte Global Insights.
Thanks very much, Stephen.
Great to be with you.
Thanks for having us.
Visit www.deloitte.com/life sciences to learn more about the Financial Times Deloitte U.S. Healthcare and Life Sciences Conference, as well as additional insights from Deloitte to this industry. And visit www.deloitte.com/global for more on Deloitte member firms' involvement in this industry, as well as other industries and service lines. You've been listening to Deloitte Global Insights, the program that looks at today's important cross-border business issues. We want to hear from you. Contact us with your feedback or suggestions for future podcast topics and find Deloitte Global Insights at www.deloitte.com/podcasts. This has been a production of Deloitte Touche Tohmatsu Limited. Thanks for listening and goodbye for now. Deloitte refers to one or more of Deloitte Touche Tohmatsu Limited, a UK private company limited by guarantee and its network of member firms, each of which is a legally separate and independent entity. Please see www.deloitte.com/about for a detailed description of the legal structure of Deloitte Touche Tohmatsu Limited and its member firms.